Hello, everybody. This is Nina once again, and you are listening to the Virtual Weed Walk. We are on episode 5 this afternoon. To recap the last audible weed walk session that we had, in the last session, we were talking about art and science. I'll briefly add on some information on that topic before I let you ponder on it. You must have heard about this magazine called Science, if you're, somebody who kind of catches up on the science news from time to time. It's called Science Mag. It comes from an organization which has several scientific journals and Science Mag. What I found out that Science Mag, since 2008, holds a competition pretty much like, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire kind of competition, except that this competition, which is actually the brainchild of a journalist called John Bohannon, this is called Dance Your PhD Contest. So anybody from anywhere in the world, they have, whether their university likes the idea, supports the idea, encourages the idea or not, can actually apply after their PhD defense to participate in this contest in which they perform their PhD dissertation. So I was interested to find out what happened to the competition now. It's 2008 to 2020, it's quite a long time. Turned out that the competition this year had happened in February 2020, just before the lockdown. And this year's competition is won by a student from Germany. Name is Antonia Kronberg, is a researcher of neuroscience and currently working on his postdoc. And the competition was won because of its innovative depiction of zebrafish brain development. That was the topic in which he actually, I saw the performance. It was actually a combination of rap and dance. So it's quite amazing. If you want, you can check out on your YouTube things like this. Pretty interesting. Now let's move on to something else. I read this news article this week. It's called COVID-19, Role of Nutrition Gardens in Ensuring Nutrition for Children. The article talks about our eastern state of Odisha, where there is record number of children, 4 out of about 10 children are undernourished in normal time. And with the, COVID time, that has increased because in Odisha, again, 5% of the COVID patients are children up to 14 years. So you see, they are already patient, they're already not malnourished, and they don't have access because of the lockdown and many other issues. They don't have access to nutritious meal, which they used to get at least one square meal from their schools. Schools are closed. So it's a kind of, lose-lose situation. So there are several organizations, including the government, NGO, private partnership. They have, they try to address this. There's a study, this is based on their study, which was done by an independent organization. The study was done across 36 countries, in which they found that the dietary diversity through nutrition gardens is an effective strategy to improve nutritional status. What it does is basically, if you are in a remote and in a poor area, you really don't have access to nutritional, the kind of nutrition diversity you need. Moreover, by the time the material reaches you, you're quite far away. So not necessarily the fresh ingredients are reaching you in time. So the best idea is to grow it in on site. So these organizations, the NGO, government and private partnership, have started this initiative to make this a reality. They have started nutritional garden in what is called Anganwadi, basically, which is the creche and the daycare, which the government run creche and the daycare centers. They have started the started this in Odisha. And for fresh supply of vegetables and fresh supply of variety of vegetables for the kids to have one square meal. And guess what they have planted? I don't have the whole full list, but looks like wild amaranth features pretty prominently in there. Made me think that we should talk about the importance of diversity. Those of you who have come to Weed Walk with me in the past, you know that I'm simply amazed by the diversity of the weeds. While the cultivated varieties, for example, tomatoes, needs a certain soil condition, temperature, actually produce healthy fruits, I did an experiment once in Oroville to grow tomatoes out of its season. And the idea was to grow tomatoes, which is beyond its season, and in small places so that people can even grow it in their balconies and things like that. So I had designed and made my own planters, and everything worked like cakewalk. Like, it was wonderful. Along with tomatoes, I did also experiment on growing some leafy vegetables, you know, amaranth and basil. And both amaranth and basil, I must say that they were hugely successful. Tomatoes were too. You know, the plants looked so healthy. They were, you know, doing very well, and they flowered profusely. Till then, I was very, very happy. But it won't fruit. It would flower and flower more, and then the flowers will, you know, drop off, but it won't fruit. So at this stage, I kind of consulted farmers, agricultural scientists, whoever could tell me something about this. And ultimately, the conclusion was tomatoes need a certain cooler temperature for it to go from the flower to the fruiting stage. If you are able to offer that, that plant, which is healthy enough, would fruit. But it also showed very clearly how much a particular temperature, a particular condition these plants needs in order to be healthy and producing. Which, you know, if it were weeds and I wouldn't be, you know, offering the ideal condition, no problem. If the most of the weeds, if you are in a garden fringe, you see that they grow profusely. The leaves are big and luscious and green. Sometimes you don't even recognize because they look almost different plants. But you remove those conditions and you have no water and you do not, you know, look after them, and it's in a place where it doesn't get, you know, regular tending. No problem. The flower, the plant, and everything as if will go to a miniature state. But what they would do, even in that state, they will still finish their life cycle. And such is their life force. Therefore, when we go and forage and pick them, pick the wild greens and incorporate in that in our diet, it's not just that we are incorporating another green, we are incorporating another set of chemicals. We are incorporating that life force in us. Perhaps an attitude towards life too. I hope so. That's what diversity does, actually. What allows the wilder plant to be so flexible that the cultivars cannot, it's because of the diversity that they hold in them that allows them to combat adverse condition, remain flexible, and be amazingly resilient. That's the reason weeds are considered to be an excellent indicators of climate change at the moment. Even in these weeds, among all the plants around us, they can adapt sooner than any other plant to the climate change condition. So what is happening now? You see that we had a cropping pattern, and cropping pattern is set, you know, for centuries of certain kind of, you know, weather condition. So the farmers knows at a certain month, they prepare the seed, they prepare the ground, and they plant. What is happening now because of the climate change, that pattern is disrupted. So it's not that it from that pattern disruption, it has quickly gone into another pattern. It has gone into a phase, and it will increasingly get to that phase, because we have to experience that for a while, where there is no pattern. So 1 year there'll be flood, 1 year there'll be, you know, plenty of rain, 1 year there'll be not enough rain and, you know, serious drought, and the cropping patterns will completely change. So that, and the extreme weather conditions too. So what happens is that the farmers are completely at a loss. You do not know when to start your seed, when you do not know when to plant. But even in this condition, you see your fields look quite lush green. Okay, if you do not know what those plants are, it just looks like a green mass of something. But if you really recognize the weeds adapt themselves. They adapt themselves to this condition where 1 year there is a, you know, a lot of rain, so they take advantage of that. 1 year there is no rain, they take advantage of that too. So they have amazing resilience in them that allows them to do so. So by actually studying weeds, which becomes excellent indicators of climate change, what the scientists are now predicting, that eventually, after this phase, which we haven't gone through as yet, of complete anarchy in a way, weather-wise, it will emerge, another pattern will emerge eventually. And in that pattern, there will be a new ecology emerging. And that new ecology will first emerge amongst weeds, because they will actually have a more settled pattern by the time everything else is catching on. So, you know, so knowing about weeds is not just our immediate dietary needs, our immediate medicinal needs, but it actually has a lot of implications for our own preparedness for climate change. So diversity is somehow a more important than the population itself. You know, if you can have a large population, a huge field of something, but maybe it comes from a very narrow gene pool. And what it does that, it makes it very prone to diseases. So it cannot fight off disease, even though there are so many of them, it has no value in the sense of actually combating something which is new and something which is threatening its existence. That's why cultivated variety often needs more tender care, more attention, because in the process of cultivating them over centuries sometimes, we have selected a particular trait. For example, larger fruit, quicker maturity, what have you, whatever you like. In doing so, what we end up is that we have made the plant weaker than its wilder cousins. And the wilder cousin, on the other hand, is still there, hopefully, and it still kind of has to fight its way, doesn't look or taste as good, has to probably, you know, in some cases, has to elbow and negotiates its element, the elements of earth, and curve itself a niche without any external help. There's a story about the grapes that makes wine and how they were saved by these delicious grapes were saved by their not so delicious cousins from across the ocean. Do you know the story? Well, I'll tell you. In Europe and France, they had selected a certain kind of grape, wonderful they were, these varieties over centuries that made excellent wine. So the vineyards full of grapes allowed making, really selective and wonderful wine, which everybody cherished for centuries, really. But even though the grapes were being cultivated in large area, due to the selection over ages, the diversity of traits among them was perhaps not very high anymore. So it was fine, except that in mid-19th century, sometime around 1850 and 1860s, what happened is that there was a severe blight that spread across widely, affecting grapes across Europe, but most, in France, it was most worst affected. So what happened is that this is what is called the Great French Wine Blight. It almost wiped off all the vineyards. It threatened the wine industry entirely. And when finally the researchers caught on, they found that there is a tiny little insect called Phylloxera. This Phylloxera insect, they thought, had come from across the ocean from the Americas. But there is really no agreement to that, because some people think that Phylloxera had already existed. For some reason, it had exploded in this manner in those years. But there was absolutely no way to save the vineyards and also the wine industry from this kind of a pandemic disease. So one thing is was clear, that they have found that in Virginia, in the USA, there was a rustic, wilder, and not so refined cousin of this very refined grapes that were being cultivated in Europe, could fight the blight off. So finally, when there was no other way to handle it, two French gentlemen, Leo Laliman and Gaston Bazile, they proposed that let the European vines be grafted with the resistant American wild stock, so that they can be resist this blight. There were lots of resistance. Nobody liked the idea, but then nobody had a better idea either. So, you know, they thought, okay, let's give it a try, and it was done, and it was a success. So the wilder cousin's ability to resist this blight actually transferred through grafting to this to these grapes, and slowly and surely the vineyards came back and the wine industry, you know, didn't die out completely. So if you now actually go to people who knows about wine in Virginia, they would still will say that, you know, for every French bottle of wine, there is a Virginia in it, because they kind of, those wilder variety actually saved it. So you see that how the wild stock, even if you are not using it, how important it is to have it, how important it is to know its existence and to know about it. The wild varieties and our diversity are much needed security network that we can have. If you reflect upon diversity, it is the key of life in every field and in every context, if you look at it that way. I read an amazing book a few years back. It is called something like In Light of Our Differences, How Diversity in Nature and Culture Makes Us Human. So this is an excellent book on linguistics. What it, from what I remember, it says that greater than 90% in diversity in the languages around the world exist around the rainforest. But you see, the rainforests are only 5 to 6% of the Earth's surface. So you can imagine the amount of diversity of language that exists in a rainforest, which also almost means that in one side of the hill, a group of people speaking one language, on the other side of the hill, there is another set. So that much of richness is there. So what is the use of that? As the rainforest gets converted for other things, gets deforested, indigenous people are displaced, what happens is that these languages are lost. But then what does it matter? Just a language dying out. But along with the language, what you lose is the immense ethnobiological knowledge about nature. Our relationship with nature itself dies out. So when you lose the relationship, you stop valuing nature the same way as these people used to value. So when you stop valuing nature, you have greater deforestation, you have greater loss. So somehow this knowledge and culture and diversity, they work hand in hand. So by knowing somebody which doesn't have immediate use, has also immense use. You know, a wild plant or animal, we call it endemic, when it grows in are found in only in one place and nowhere else. It is called rare and endemic when the place of it where it's growing itself are not that many. So there are, you know, few places, like, you know, little niches, which happens often in the rainforest. There are little nooks and corners where a certain creature specializes and utilizes to survive. Sometimes they are very, amazing symbiosis happens. Like, for example, they can be a tree which has developed by, and it can only germinate if a certain kind of bird comes and eats the fruit and disperses its seed. No other. You know, so that kind of very close relationship, when one gets disrupted, like the bird vanishes or somehow the tree is not there, so it kind of, you don't lose the tree only, you lose the bird, you lose everything that is associated with that network. And somehow, in this whole process, human beings are also part of it. Indigenous people first, but in it, even remotely, as we are sitting far away from the rainforest, we are also affected. It's just that we perhaps don't know. So, in the ESA, which I have talked about at length last time, there was a paper. It's from the East Texas University. It talks about a new approach to sustainability using art in schoolyard ecology. To honor diversity and nature. They argue that it is not only possible but a requirement that a learning is done through body. That is, a learning is only complete when you are drawing, sketching, painting, participating in storytelling, exploring outdoors in relation to the environment, and only then you develop this relation and you kind of become an environmental steward. It kind of encourages you towards that stewardship. The paper says that such activity promotes a sense of moral agency for earth stewardship. With our coloring book on weeds, we are doing exactly that. So there's a lot of food for thought on diversity. I'll leave you with that this week, and I'll see you next time.